This is PhotoBizX episode number 234, and today we're talking portrait parties, something I've never heard of. I know you're going to love, particularly if you are shooting headshots or commercial photography. The guest who's going to be sharing this strategy with us is a fellow podcaster from ProPhotographerJourney.com. I'm talking about Shamira Young, and that interview's coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. It's always fun for me, a little bit intimidating, interviewing another podcast host. But I know you're going to love this interview with Shamira. You're also going to love her podcast if you haven't heard it before and the strategy that she shares. Yeah, it's cool. You're going to love it. Do you ever find that there's things that you just don't want to do and you keep putting them off and you keep putting them off and putting them off, and then people start asking for them and you start feeling bad and they just sit in the back of your head and they're constantly on your mind until you actually get them done? Well, that's what I've been going through, and believe it or not, it hasn't even been that bad. It's my photos from France, from my France trip in July. I promised everyone I'd get all the photos edited up onto Dropbox, but since getting back, life has just been hectic and things pop up and that photography and that trip sort of goes on the back burner. And then, like I said, I started getting emails, people are asking for them, and it's been a month and it just feels like it's work. And I'm like, just keep putting this thing off and I've got to do it. Anyway, I thought, okay, I've got to do it. So I start, and wouldn't you know it, as soon as I start, I think, well, this actually isn't so bad. And I find that is so often the case with anything that I'm putting off. Once I actually make a start, it's never so bad. And that could be, you know, designing a new price list, starting to rework the website, or just sorting out a new page, coming up with a new campaign to market the business, going to network with other business owners, whatever. If there's something that I've got to do that I don't feel like doing, it tends to take up more space in my head and cause more anxiety by not getting it done and not making a start on it. And I so often find that, I'm sure, well, I'll be curious to know if it's the same for you. I was going to say, I'm sure it's the same for you, but you know, you find that once you get started, it's like, well, why did I bother putting this off? I should have just done this weeks ago and just done it. It probably stems from being back at school and putting off homework and assignments. And I don't know if that's a guy thing, because I remember when I was at school, so many of the girls, most of the girls, would be, you know, making a start early. As soon as the assignment would be handed out, they would be making a start on it. And I think, wow, this isn't due for a couple of weeks. I'm not starting yet. And then sure enough, a couple of days ago, I was like, oh man, I've got to get this done. You think we'd learn earlier, but I guess we don't. Again, that's probably a guy thing as well. I don't know if you've been through things like that. Let me know if you have in the comments area. Do you have a way, a technique, a strategy to actually make a start on the things that you don't want to be doing? Do you just make an entry in your diary? Do you punish yourself and not let yourself do something fun until you make a start on the thing that you don't want to be doing? Or do you do it first thing in the morning? If you've got any tricks or techniques or strategies that work for you, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. Leave a comment in the show notes for today's episode.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
In last week's episode, I interviewed UK photographer Louise Downham. Wow, what a life she has had already, you know, starting up the photography gallery and trying to make that work and then going into business for herself. For me, the biggest takeaway was her local SEO strategy and networking on a real micro level to build these relationships and these contacts and to get known, not only through her website, but also personally as well. You know, getting published in these little tiny publications and magazines from little community groups. I mean, that really is working on a micro level. And I know I should take a feather from Louise's cap, because I'm guilty of targeting the Central Coast, which is where I live. You know, but I live in one small little suburb in the Central Coast called Terrigal, and I'm surrounded by other small suburbs. But I know that my competition and myself, we all target the Central Coast because that's what we assume that people are searching for. Funnily enough, I know from experience, after the Gabrielle Mochere interview on SEO, after recording some YouTube videos on local spots for wedding photography in Terrigal, they rank on the very first page of Google, video after video after video that I recorded in Terrigal. This works. Louise reinforced that. I think it was a great idea. Have a listen if you haven't heard that one. I know you're going to get a lot out of this if you're looking to rank your website and get known in your little community or your local community if you focus on a small part of it.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Today's guest is a fellow photography business podcast host. She's also a teacher with courses hosted at Toots Plus and Udemy, as well as her site at prophotographerjourney.com. Her courses include training on Photoshop, business prep, setting up your WordPress hosting and site, email marketing, keeping clients happy, printing promotional material, utilizing Capture One for fashion photographers, plus others, including something that really caught my attention, and that was how to host a portrait party. In addition to her photography, teaching, and podcasting, she's an artist, graphic designer, illustrator, print and web designer with clients all over the world. She studied at the University of Michigan School of Art and Design, and searching her name online, she seems to be everywhere. I'm talking about Shamira Young, and I'm rapt to have her with me now. Shamira, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me. Wow, you did some research there, didn't you?
Well, you are everywhere. I've got more tabs open for this interview than I've ever had open.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for that robust intro. Wow.
So maybe we can start with you giving the listener and me an idea of, you know, how you generate income these days. Because I mentioned a lot of different things there. Like, what's the primary source of income and how are you making money these days?
Sure. You know, my primary source of income right now is actually my photography business. So I am a full-time business photographer, corporate photographer here in the Port Huron, Michigan area.
That is good to hear, because sometimes you do these interviews or I do these interviews and then it turns out, you know, that the main source of income is from teaching or other things, you know, that the guest isn't actually shooting much anymore. So your primary source of income is shooting, but then you have these other things. Are they all still happening?
You know, they are. So I do have some income coming in here and there from different online courses. I do some guest posting on some blogs as well. So, you know, there's some income, but by and large, the main meat of the money that comes in is from my actual photography business.
Awesome. Unreal. And so can you give us an idea about the type of photography? You said sort of corporate photography. Is that headshots or is it more varied than headshots?
Yeah. So when people ask me what kind of photographer I am, I will say that I'm a corporate photographer. So that definitely includes headshots. It includes what I call personality portraits as well, more than just the head and shoulders. So picture a CEO sitting at their desk, for example. So it encapsulates more of their body. I also do some shooting for groups as well, like employee teams of people, primarily small to medium-sized businesses and some office shots too. You know, take a picture of our building or the inside of our office for our website. So that type of thing.
Very cool. All right. How did you get into that style of photography? You know, did you move from weddings or portraits or you went straight into corporate?
Ah, you read me like a book. You know, I do have a background in family portraiture and wedding photography as well. And long story short, I started off with motorcycle photography. That's when I was working as an employee at a motorcycle magazine. And, you know, going into that interview, I didn't know what I was getting into. They said choppers. I thought helicopters. I go in for the interview and there are pictures of these motorcycles all over the walls, custom choppers, built choppers. So to this day, I still have an appreciation for choppers, but it was there that I really got my hands dirty shooting. We would 9 times out of 10 fly in our models and shoot the covers in house. And so I became integrated into the team of photographers that they had there. Everyone shot with Canon, by the way, so it made sense for me to purchase a Canon body so I could borrow their lenses. You know, I'm actually not a brand snob. If you shoot Nikon, that's fine. Sony, that's fine. Whatever, you know. And so I was there for a few years. Then I broke off on my own. And it was then that I really focused on families, senior portraiture, wedding photography, whatever came my way. I took anything and everything. I charged next to nothing and I ran myself into the ground. After that, you know, it was really a recent decision to focus on corporate photography. And in a nutshell, we sold our house and purchased another house. And so we ended up moving about 1/2 an hour north where I was previously living, you know, and by this time I was not still charging next to nothing for my photography services. You know, I had grown a little bit as a photographer, but I decided that I wanted to shift my focus to working with businesses because I really enjoy just interacting with businesses and the ins and outs and just the work that goes into growing a business. I love that, which I think is why I geek out more talking about photography business rather than photography gear, actually. And so, you know, when I moved up here to Port Huron, I decided to focus on business photography. Initially, I thought I was just going to focus on headshots because I thought, oh, that'll be easy. It's just the head. Well, actually, when you're only taking a photo of someone's head, you have to pay attention to every single detail. So I definitely gained an appreciation of that. It felt like I was starting my business over from the ground up, by the way, because I didn't have a portfolio full of headshots or business photography when I moved here. I had to really build that from the ground up.
Nice. Let's just go back just a touch, Shamira, because when you were living in Michigan and you were shooting everything and you felt you were being run into the ground, but your prices were coming up, I'm guessing at that stage you must have been shooting some corporate work. Like you must have known that you had an idea that's where you wanted to go.
Actually, no. So while I was shooting weddings, you're saying, and family portraits?
Yeah.
You know, at the time, my pricing gradually went up bit by bit. But it probably wasn't until just before the move to Port Huron. So still within Michigan. But yeah, it wasn't until the move to Port Huron that I really decided to change my focus. So maybe a couple months before we switched houses. I hope that makes sense.
So what's the catalyst? What even brought the thought into your head that you can shoot commercial or corporate work? Like you'd never even done it.
Weddings were giving me gray hairs. Those are beasts. And I haven't done a ton of them, but I did enough of them to know that I did not want to continue doing that. Now, it was some of the best money and some of the best photography that I'd done at the time. But a good month before a person's wedding, I mean, I was sleepless nights I was having. It was just, it's a beast. My very first wedding that I shot, I woke up with the flu that morning, full blown flu. And it was going to be like a 9 or 10 hour day. I had hired an assistant. We knocked it out of the park. I was swigging caffeine and DayQuil, you know, like cough medicine. You know, we made it work and it was good money, but I was just like, I can't live my life shooting weddings. And, you know, as far as deciding to focus on business, I'm not sure. I mean, I've kind of always had an underlying fascination with the ins and outs of a business, things that go into running, especially a small business. There's so much more that goes into it than I think many folks realize. Especially if they're not running a business themselves. I mean, not to sound snooty or anything, but my own photography business, 80% of the time I'm doing business stuff, you know, marketing, client communication. It's only 20% of the time that I feel like I'm shooting, you know? And so I guess having that healthy respect for businesses, I enjoy hearing about other people's businesses too, outside of photography. So me focusing on businesses now, it gives me an excuse to kind of poke my head into other types of businesses. I'm nosy. What can I say?
So you make the move to Port Huron. Is that the right name? Port Huron?
Yeah, Port Huron.
Okay, so you make the move and you decide to focus on corporate photography. How do you get those first clients?
You know, I started off, I joined the Chamber of Commerce almost right away. I'm assuming they have something equivalent.
They do. Something similar?
Yeah. In Australia? Yeah.
They do. I'd never been to one. So is it like, is there one photographer? Is there one graphic designer or is it just anyone that wants to come that's in the local community that has a business? Like who goes to these meetings?
For the Chamber of Commerce, you could have 1,000 photographers sign up and it's just fine. They take anybody.
Right. And then what happens? Do you all refer each other? Do you just share your experience? Like what happens at these meetings? Like how do you generate work from these things?
You know, it's really what you make of it. So for our Chamber of Commerce here, which is awesome, by the way, and they've helped me so much, they have a number of different meetings throughout the week. And so they have their networking meetings. Say, for example, Thursday mornings, we get together for coffee. There's maybe 15 or 20 of us. It's whoever wants to show up. We go around the table and we give a short commercial about our business. We'll give testimonials about each other's businesses if we've worked with each other. We do have a presenter who gives a presentation about their business. And at the end, there's some networking where people kind of chat. So there's that. They have other types of meetings with the chamber. They have open houses and ribbon cuttings for new businesses, for example. And those happen on a weekly basis here. So when a new business comes to the area, for example, and they join the chamber will help them host their open house or their ribbon cutting. And so while it is an event focusing on another business, you'll get all types of businesses that will show up to support that person. And what I found inevitably happens is that even if I show up not intending to talk about my business at all, I'm just there to support this new business, there's always networking that happens because there's a bunch of us there. And people inevitably ask, like, oh, yeah, you're that photographer. I wanted to talk to you about headshots. So, and they have lunch and learns with the chamber as well. That's another kind of meeting. So you show up, you get lunch. They have a business presenting something educational. Again, networking happens. So there's no requirement for attending any of these meetings at all, by the way. It is what you make of it.
Okay. And to become a member, it costs money?
It does. Yep.
How much?
Well, for here, it's like $100 for the year. Now, at the time of this recording, I don't know if they're going to have any price hikes, but totally affordable, totally worth it. But they do have different pricing tiers depending on the size of your business. Now, with that said, I will say that I also joined another networking group called BNI. So Business, I think it's Business Network International. Yeah. Now, that costs more and there is an attendance requirement. But that was also very, very effective for me to grow my business. And in that type of group, they only allow one type of business, like one photographer. So one person per industry.
Okay. Just talk to me about how you generate work. I mean, you say networking. So does that mean everyone just turns up and hands their business cards and basically spruiks about how good they are at what they do? But I imagine that to get work, you have to solve the problem for the person you're talking to more so than try and sell yourself. How do you get work from these meetings?
I guess to kind of rewind a little bit. So when I first moved to Port Huron, I joined the chamber, I joined ENI, I started attending meetings. I felt like I was networking my butt off, but I wasn't getting any work. And it was really frustrating. And it was a combination of people needed to get to know me because I was a new face. Plus, it just takes time for work to come in. And so when I moved here, I was hungry for work, I was networking. And I needed to do something different. So I decided to give my business kind of a boost, I guess, with a strategic portrait party, actually. So to kind of get things off the ground and give myself some momentum. Now, it was the portrait party that helped me gain a list of contacts for the future, as well as current immediate clients to work with. And after that, it was much easier, actually, because it created a buzz around town. So people knew me by name and by face by then. And I can go into the portrait party if you want.
Yeah, I do want to go into that because I know when I did some research on you that you have this portrait party kit and you've got a lot of work throwing portrait parties. So I Googled portrait party and I saw all sorts of photos of kids and toddlers and I didn't see anything like you're doing all corporate work like headshots and, like you said, personality portraits.
For the portrait party, actually, I've just been focusing on headshots to keep it simple. Kind of like an entry-level foot-in-the-door type of thing.
All right. Okay, then. What is a portrait party? Like, when I say portrait party, or when you do, what do you mean?
Yeah. So, in a nutshell, when I throw a portrait party, it is a 2 to 3 hour event where I shoot maybe 12 to 15 headshots. Because I am a business corporate photographer, it's all business owners. I do open it up to anyone who wants to attend. So, that means even if you have not reserved a spot to get a headshot, you can still come and network with the other business owners. So there's food, there's light music. There's a limited number of headshots that I can do. You know, obviously, if it's 2 to 3 hours, you can only fit in so many people. So they have reserved and paid for their spots in advance. But when I do it for my business, I try to make it different, like a Tupperware party. I'm not knocking Tupperware, of course. I don't want people to think, oh, Tupperware or makeup or, you know, like there are a million types of parties that go on in someone's home. So when I threw mine, I didn't throw it in my house. I held it in a professional space. I marketed it like a networking event. So it was a business mixer. I wanted it to be classy. I also documented it well and created a cool little video about it after the fact to help generate buzz around town, which went surprisingly a long way on Facebook. Like one 60-second video on Facebook, people are like, wow, congratulations on your party, you know. So
it looks great. I mean, the video looks super professional. It looks fantastic. I mean, you can see that it would be a great party to attend to, particularly if you're looking for some, you know, networking opportunities and some headshots.
Oh, thank you. You watched the video. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was amazing. I've got so many questions about this, and I know that there's probably a particular order, but it sounds like you opened the party invitations up to your BNI group, your Chamber of Commerce group, and then you allow them to invite other people, but you capped it at 12 to 15. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes. I distributed physical flyers to my BNI group, as well as my Chamber of Commerce networking group. And I also created a Facebook event. I invited people. I think that first one, it was just 12 spots that I had open because I wasn't quite sure how things would go. So I let everyone know that I only had 12 spots open, but if you wanted to come and just check things out for free, totally come and eat the food and, you know, meet people. So we had about twice as many people show up. So a couple dozen people actually show up. So I did 12 headshots. We had another 12 that were just there to check things out roughly. And the nice thing is they got to see me working with other people. So even though they didn't trust me enough at the time, totally understandable because I was new to town, you know, trust me to take their headshot, they still saw me interacting and having a good time with other people. And I made sure to chat with everybody. So go around and talk to everyone, shake everyone's hand, introduce myself, and just make sure everyone was having a good time.
So you were the host and the photographer. So you had to be working the room, so to speak.
You know, I did hire an assistant that day, though, by the way, which totally helpful. They helped move things along, keep people on schedule with their headshots. They also helped document the evening. So in her downtime, I had her going around and taking photo and moving video footage. And that was super, super important. All the effort that I put to throwing that party, I was going to document the heck out of it and make it work for me even after the night was over.
Yeah. So when you went into this, Shamira, was the idea to make money or was it to network or was it both?
Oh, it was both. You know, to be honest, at the time, I was hurting for money. I really needed more clients. It's not even like I charged a ton either.
How much did you charge?
I charged $50.
Okay. So what were they going to get for $50?
For $50, they would get a private online gallery and 2 to 3 of the best headshots, digital files that they could download. Available, I think, 5 business days after the portrait part. Totally a bargain. And in my marketing material, so the flyers that I printed out and was handing out and on the Facebook event page, I made sure they knew that this was a super promotional price. Super promotional. But at the time, it was worth it to me, not only for the immediate income for that evening, but having a list of contacts that I could market to in the future, you know, in soft marketing, but through a newsletter and keep in touch with. Totally, totally worth it to me. And also a side benefit that I found was that the folks that showed up for free just to check me out, they ended up requesting work from me later.
Oh, that's cool. So was there any upselling opportunities after, you know, the client took their 2 or 3 headshots?
Honestly, no. I felt so, I kind of overwhelmed at that first one. Or not overwhelmed, but there were so many moving parts that I didn't do any upselling. What I'm finding in this area is that businesses, they really value the digital file because they end up forwarding that to their marketing department, whatever printer they use for their business cards, for billboards. So I guess trying to upsell a print, the people that I've interacted with, they haven't seen any value in that.
Sure. I guess if you would do this again, my instant thought is, give away or include one file and then have the potential to sell 2, 3, or 4 more afterwards. I mean, would you recommend that now if you go back and do this again?
I think that's a great strategy. Yeah, there's potential in that. And even upselling the personality portraits from the basic headshots. And that was something that happened a little bit with people, actually. You can only go so far with the headshot. You know, it's your head and your shoulders. For the portrait party, I had a standard background. I had white background and a black backdrop, just a portable 5x7, flip it around. And so you can capture only so much of their personality with that. Now, with the personality portraits that I sell, it's more of your body. It includes more of your body, but also you can deviate away from the backdrop and use more of the natural background. So whatever office, you know, like it could be in their office, for example. So that's an upsell that makes sense that I've considered doing, starting with the headshot.
I can see huge potential for sure.
Yeah.
Especially with that follow-up marketing. You know, now you've got that foot in the door. They know you. They know your personality. You're fun to work with. They've had that initial shoot. everything gets easier.
Definitely. Yeah. But, you know, even doing the basic headshots that night, all of a sudden I had a portfolio of work. Like before, you know, it was like I was trying to fill my portfolio and then I had a bunch, which was really, really nice, actually.
Unreal. I mean, you said you hired a space. Like, was it a commercial space? Was it one of the offices from one of the people that signed up for the party? How did you get this space or what was it?
I'm actually part of a co-working space here. Are you familiar with the concept of co-working?
Yeah. But I didn't know you could actually take over the whole space for your own use.
We have an awesome co-working space here where it actually has an event space with it. And they're popping up all over the country. Port Huron usually takes a little while to, I guess, jump on the bandwagon. So we have some here. So I know it's got to be just about everywhere now. And so with our co-working space, it's divided kind of into two parts. So one part has the desks where different business owners who work independently, you know, we come together to work on our businesses, our separate businesses together, so to speak. So we have the office setting. And then on the other side, we have a cool spot. And it's in the video that I posted with black leather couches and colorful walls and murals. And like, it's such a creative spot. And we actually rent that event space out to businesses in the city. So the Chamber of Commerce, they've rented the space out to do some of their networking events. We've had other businesses do trainings there. And it just made sense for me to rent that space out for my co-working party. It has nice high ceilings, just the perfect thing.
It looks really cool.
Thank you. You know, it makes people, in my opinion, take you so much more seriously when you're in a professional space, be it a co-working space or a conference room in a hotel. But something not in your house makes you stand out.
That's true. It sounds like you organized food and drink as well. So you had catering?
I totally had it catered. And it was all of, I think I spent maybe $75 on food and drinks. I mean, there was no alcohol. It was just coffee and pop. And I ended up spending way too much that first time around.
So you've done this a couple of times now?
Yeah, I've done it 3 times. I try not to do it too much because I don't want to be known as the discount photographer in town. Absolutely not. You know, I use the technique sparingly.
Okay. And just talk me through the setup. Like, is it a pretty basic lighting setup? Are you moving things around all the time? Or are you just sticking with one setup and just sort of pumping the people through?
Pretty basic setup. I had one big, huge, I mean, it was my 50-inch Mega Apollo softbox. So nice, soft, big diffused light. And that thing didn't move. I actually had tape on the floor of where it needed to be. And then tape on the floor for the stool where I had people sit. Because when things get moving, especially me, I'm kind of an introverted person. So big crowds kind of jolt me, you know, and I get scatterbrained. So I needed to know exactly where things needed to be and needed to stay there. Now, I will say that the 5x7 backdrop that I used, I literally just leaned it against the wall and it was perfect. So for every person, I'd take some shots on the black side and then I'd flip it around and take some shots on the white side. So that was the only moving piece as far as my lighting setup. I had it in the corner of the room, so there was a little bit of privacy, but I wanted to leave it open on purpose so that other people who were just kind of chilling out, you know, having some coffee, they could check out what was going on. Because it was important that they saw me working as a professional. And by the way, the lighting that I had, or rather the 50-inch Mega Apollo that I used, was overkill for headshots. I nicknamed it Bertha because she's just huge and she's wonderful and beautiful, soft light. I knew I didn't necessarily need to use it for the headshot party, but it was so impressive that, again, it just makes people take you that much more seriously. People walk in and they're like, oh, look at that huge light.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm a professional.
For sure. Yeah. I think people will be like, they're wowed by that kind of thing, aren't they? When they walk in, it's like, oh, wow, pro photographer.
Right. Exactly.
Well, so after the portrait party, so you have these files. Do you upload them to PixieSet or somewhere where the client can just download them automatically? Or how does it work at the back end?
Yeah, I use Sprout Studio, actually.
Okay, Brian Caparici's software.
Yeah, you've probably had him on your show at some point.
Yeah, a few times. Yeah.
He's a great guy. I switched over to his software about the same time that I moved to Port Huron last year. And it's been great. And Brian is not paying me to say any of this, but seriously. Like when I signed up and that same week, I think I was under the trial period and I had to send out a contract an invoice. I had a client actually pay early because it was just so darn easy for them to sign everything electronically and make the payment. I was like, huh, I don't have to go chasing money. So yeah, that's what I use for the portrait party.
Do the clients that you photograph, do they choose their favorite three or do you pick three and that's what they get?
I pick 2 to 3 and that's what they get. For the price that I was charging, I didn't have time for back and forth. So
yeah, sure. Okay, so you streamlined this as best you could for yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. Has anything changed between, you know, the first portrait party that you did and what you're doing now? Like, is there anything that you think, oh, I wish I had done that earlier?
Has anything changed? You know, honestly, no. I run it about the same as that very first one that I ran. I put a lot of thought into how I would run that first one. I mean, even getting people excited before the party, for example, that's a huge piece of it. So I started marketing a month before the party started. So whenever you registered, you were sent, think of like an autoresponder, an email autoresponder, except I was writing these things out by hand and then scheduling them to go out. So they'd get a series of emails before, whether you were getting a headshot or not. And in the email, I included a cool shot of the co-working space so they knew what to expect, you know, and parking instructions and here's how the evening is going to go. And so that whole sequence, and then we did the party. And then afterwards, I did a follow-up sequence. I still do that to this day. Trying to think if there's anything I've changed.
So it's obviously working.
Not really.
I mean, because it's not a huge money earner on the night. There's got to be the back end benefits as well. Like, it must be helping your business if you're continuing to do this.
Oh, totally. You know, even from that first one. So I tell people ad nauseum that I'm a business corporate photographer. And I feel like I repeat myself a million times and still I'll get all kinds of photography requests. So after that first portrait party, I got a request for more business photography, obviously, but also family photography. We have a custom builder who makes like high-end homes in the area, builds high-end homes. They wanted some photography shots of some of their work. And so aside from the money that night, it helped get my name out there. All kinds of requests were coming in. Obviously, I can't take them all. You know, I'm trying to not be a family photographer right now. So at the time, I had to turn some of that down. But still, and I mean, even I shoot for a local magazine here where they focus on positive businesses in the area, for example. And they actually came, the CEO wanted to have coffee with me. It was probably a good maybe 3 or 4 months after my portrait party. And we sat down and the first thing he said was, "You're that photographer that threw that cool portrait networking event thingy, aren't you?" Like, that's how he remembered me. Just from, I don't know, maybe he saw the 60-second video somewhere. And so, I mean, even that helped me gain credibility in a town that's Port Huron's, I mean, we're a city, you know, but we're like a small city. So we're travels fast. So it kind of helped me stand out because honestly, one of my concerns moving here was there's so many photographers here around every corner. You know, I don't know how this is going to work out. So I had to do something to kind of come in with a bang and get my name out there as best I could anyway.
Yeah, I love this idea. I can imagine that this would also work for portrait photographers. I don't think you necessarily need to be a corporate photographer for this to work. When I Googled it, that's what I saw, kids. Do you know other photographers using this strategy for that style of or that genre of photography?
Oh, totally. I would venture to say it's probably more common for family portrait photographers to use it. The nice thing about it is that, yeah, it can be applied to many different genres. So you have family, you have kids. Someone here suggested I do a portrait party for rock bands in the area, which I haven't done yet. But like, if you can get a bunch of people in one spot, you can do whatever kind of theme that you want, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I think the idea of, you know, photographing one person at a time, you know, whether it's a corporate style headshot or, you know, one child, I think it's going to be easier than shooting a band.
Yeah, I agree.
That sounds like a tough gig.
I totally agree. And that's why I hesitated on it. You know, I can only handle so many moving pieces at once. But I will say, and I don't want to forget to mention this, that incorporating kind of the charity aspect of it. So I had, they're called Women's Life. They are a cool national organization headquartered in Port Huron, here of all places. And I had a lady approach me, a friend, and she wanted me to throw a portrait party that was themed for Women's Life. So only Women's Life members. So it was the first time someone approached me and said that they want me to throw them a party, but we donated a percentage to charity. And that was cool just because it infused it with more meaning than just, you know, me trying to make money. And at the same time, they did all of the marketing for me. So the woman who approached me, she spread out the word among the members. And we have like so many chapters, women's life chapters here. So they're wonderful, vibrant women. They do work in the community. There's also an insurance component attached to it. And they're just so much fun. So I didn't have to do a lick of marketing. She rounded up about 15 women. And she even handled the food. So the organization, they offered to handle catering. So it was like sushi and wine, which I'm there if there's sushi and wine. And it was like a night of rowdy, fun women. We had so much fun.
I'm starting to think now in my head, there's so many different little avenues you could explore the idea of doing these parties, you know, with charities or even pet photographers, getting people with their pets together. And then if you incorporate that with a fundraiser. So I'm guessing, did you put your prices up then if it was including, you know, some money for charity?
You know, I actually did.
Oh, so it came off for yours.
I kept it at 50.
Oh, okay. So you gave away a part of your takings to charity.
I did. And when they approached me, I wasn't hurting for money like I was with the first one that I threw. So, you know, moving forward, I know I need to raise my prices. And I've had people tell me, you need to raise your prices, like other business owners. So that is totally something that I would change in the future.
Sure. So this is one thing that you're doing. Is work coming from other avenues as well?
Well, other avenues within photography, are you asking?
Or? Yeah. I'm just wondering how, I mean, because you're working full-time as a photographer, and I guess that the parties are only making up a small portion of the time that you're spending shooting. How are other clients finding you and booking you?
Sure. So what I found over time was that people began approaching me for regular monthly work. And that's been nice because that's less work I have to go out and find. Also, because I'm only one person, I'm currently experiencing the pain of, okay, I can only take on so much work. Maybe I should start incorporating other associate photographers, which I haven't worked that out yet. So as far as the gigs that take up my time right now, for example, I shoot for the hospital here and I'm essentially their photographer, meaning whenever they have a photography need, then they call me. And it's usually about every month, maybe every other month. And they just went through a name change and a CEO change and staffing changes, by the way. So when I moved here to this city, it kind of coincided with their rebranding effort. So when they approached me, and they had heard of me because of the portrait party, but also through the Chamber of Commerce. Again, the Chamber of Commerce was totally helpful.
So they had a representative in the Chamber of Commerce, someone from the hospital?
There's a little story behind that. And just to condense it, when I first moved here, there was a woman in the, awesome, she's a friend now. She was in the Chamber of Commerce and she was working there. And then a few months later, she ended up leaving the chamber and working in the marketing department of the hospital. And we kept in touch. So when they told her that she needed to find a photographer, she thought of me because she knew me through the chamber. Even though there are a handful of other photographers in the Chamber of Commerce, I don't really see them at networking meetings, which worked out for me. So yeah, when she got that position, she wanted to sit down with me and talk about the possibility of me doing photography for them.
So with that woman and the hospital, do you then work out a monthly fee? Do you work out, is it a per hour fee? Is it a per session fee? Like, how do you work out or structure your pricing for them?
Sure. My pricing for them and actually for all of my other clients is I work it out not per hour, but per person. And I found that to be super advantageous because the better I get at photography, the faster I shoot. So why would I penalize myself charging by the hour if I'm going to get faster and earn less? So for example, when I go in and shoot for the hospital, the first shoot I did with them, there was like a dozen doctors, nurses, different staff, and I did it by the person. So with each person, I do provide a small amount of headshots. You know, again, the online gallery, they can download, or the marketing department in this case downloads whatever they want, and then they can disperse it to their printer for billboards or brochures or videos or whatever. But yeah, it's by the person.
Okay. How much do you charge per person?
Oh, I think it's $225 for one headshot or one person.
Yeah, cool. Okay. And then it goes down if they go to groups, then it comes down per person.
Yeah. So it all has to be in the same day. But once you get to, I think, three people, then the group rate kicks in. And then I have different tiers. So 3 to 5, 6 to 9, 10 to whatever on up from there.
Isn't it funny how, you know, you said to me straight away, you're going to tell me my prices are too low. That's a natural reaction, I think, from a lot of photographers.
I know.
I didn't even think that your prices were low, but straight away you start to worry that you're too cheap.
I know.
So why is that?
Probably a little bit of insecurity, because I'll say it front, like I still have areas. I've been doing this for years and I still have insecure areas. I mean, Port Huron is not an expensive area at all. Like, people are super price conscious here. And so, you know, I take that into consideration. I don't know. It's just, it's, you know, pricing, like, I guess not a personal thing, but it feels like I'm exposing myself a little bit to talk about pricing, you know?
I think that's right. But, you know, when I look at your price, say $225 for a headshot, we're talking US dollars. So if you were to shoot three headshots in an hour, which is totally doable, I mean, we're talking pretty good money. I mean, great money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, for example, the first shoot I did with the hospital, I was so nervous. It went well. But yeah, we had about 12 people. And I think I took maybe 3 hours with that. And I've gotten to the point where I'm much faster, but I shoot better. And obviously, I'm more comfortable directing people on how they should pose and getting them nice and relaxed. So to do 12 people now, maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. So, you know, imagine if I were charging by the hour, right? So even if I were, let's say I was charging $200 an hour. Okay, that seems like good money. You know, but if I take 2 hours, that's $400. But if I take 2 hours to shoot, let's say, even 9 people at $135 a person, for example, you know, however much that is in 2 hours, is pretty good money.
Yeah, we're talking $1,200.
Right. And it's nice because the hospital, you know, values their time. So the faster I go, the happier they are. I think there was one shoot, we had an hour. So they have me set up whenever there's like a meeting where the doctors have to come together. They'll have me set up outside the doors of that meeting. So the doctors have to get their headshots taken because they're not always the most excited. And I think we had like 9 or 10 of them. And we pumped them out in an hour. And like, I got home that night and I'm like, yeah, all right.
Cool. So you're getting paid for your expertise rather than the hours that you're spending there on the job.
Yeah, because I started, so years ago when I was doing family portraiture and I was just starting on my own after I left the magazine, for example, one of the first shoots I did, I was charging like $25 an hour. And the family was like, great, we're going to book you for 4 hours. I never worked so hard for $100. I was like, this, something has to change. This doesn't seem quite right. So,
wow, that's a tough lesson to learn, that one.
Yeah.
You know, talking to you, Shamira, you know, you told me that you're introverted. You know, you got a little bit worried about sharing a price. Can you just talk to me about going into BNI or to the Chamber of Commerce for the first time? I mean, was it scary and how did you handle it?
You know, it was scary. I guess any social situation where you're walking in for the first time and you don't know anybody, and especially if there's something different about you. So I believe if there's something different in the way that you look or you act, that can totally be beneficial for your business because it makes you more memorable. But at the same time, it can be nerve-wracking when you're walking into a social situation and you kind of stand out. So if you've seen a photo of me, I've got dreadlocks with red tips. And I dress kind of artsy. I mean, I went to art school, so I'm kind of like a hippie, sort of like a business hippie. So usually when I walk in, you know, it's like, oh, who's that chick with the dreadlocks? You know, everyone's been nothing but friendly to me. So a lot of this is in my head to a certain extent. But yeah, it can be nerve-wracking. So yeah, I was nervous those first meetings. But, you know, again, it makes you more memorable. People are kind of curious if there's something different about you. I don't think people could sense that I'm nervous. People tell me that they can't really, like, inside, you know, I'm freaking out, but you gotta get out there outside of your comfort zone. It's kind of where the magic happens, as uncomfortable as it can be.
So you're in the car before you go in, you've got butterflies, you are nervous.
Yeah, probably still to this day, just because I'm an introvert, or maybe the correct term is ambivert, when you're a little bit of both. So I can be in a social situation for, you know, a while, but at the end of the day, I need to come home to peace and quiet and recharge my battery. So yeah, I'm sitting in the car freaking out, basically.
Okay, so you psych yourself up, you go in, and because the very first time, I mean, that's got to be the scariest because you don't even know what to expect. So you walk in, is there a room full of people? Is everyone sitting down? Are they all standing up chatting and laughing and they look to you as you walk in the door? Like, just talk me through that first time you go in, because I think this is important, because if the listener hears this and they're thinking about doing this, this is the scariest part for anyone, not just you.
Right. So for me, when I walk into a room full of people, I'm immediately overwhelmed, my senses. And what I find is that I tend to look everywhere and not focus on anybody because I'm trying to take everything in, which is, I don't know if I'm explaining that right, but it's just a feeling of being overwhelmed and not knowing where to look or what to do with my hands or where to sit. And if there are any empty seats, because usually because I'm trying to look everywhere, I can't focus on anything. So if there are empty seats, I usually overlook it, you know, for the first minute. People are usually networking and chatting. So when you walk into these meetings, if you get there early, which I do encourage you to get there early, don't be the one that shows up late. I've been there. It's not fun walking into a room and everyone's head swivels towards the door when you walk in, you know, so like try to get there, you know, 10 to 15 minutes early, take a moment to calm down. And usually someone will approach you. That's what I found with me, especially because I was new, that whoever was throwing the meeting, they're kind of keeping an eye out for new folks who are walking in. So for the Chamber of Commerce, you know, one of their reps would come over and greet me and say hello, and we start chatting and they'll point out an empty chair. And from there, it just gets easier. Like, there's no getting around the nervous part. You know, people are going to ask you what you do. Have some kind of response prepared, by the way. Try not to just wing it off the top of your head. It'll get easier to talk about yourself over time as well.
Yeah. I love the idea or the way you described that when you walk in, someone is there looking for you. Someone will come over to you. I mean, that's a pretty cool thing to know. For someone thinking about doing this for the first time, you're not going to walk in and have to go and initiate conversation. Someone's going to come to them. It's always like that?
Most of the time. I mean, because I'm also a super awkward person. At times, there have been times I walk in and, you know, no one says hello and I'm just kind of standing there like, oh, freaking out. What do I do? But what I've learned is that it's not about you. So even though I feel super self-conscious, no one else is noticing that I'm having this awkward moment because everyone is so focused on themselves and their business, which can actually work to your advantage. So now when I walk in, for example, usually there's someone else who's sitting by themselves, by the way, or not talking to anybody. So I walk up to that person and strike up a conversation and I ask about their business and what they do and what they're passionate about. And then they start talking and we have a conversation and it takes the pressure off of me, actually, because make it about them. And then they'll inevitably ask you about what you do, you know, just as a matter of course. But yeah, it's not all about you and your business, I guess.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks so much for opening up and sharing something. I know for me, I feel exactly the same as you. And, you know, the listener, they hear that. I know you're a podcast host, you know, and you come across as extroverted, you know, when you're doing your interviews and stuff, and people don't believe people like you could be introverted. What was the word you used?
Ambivert.
I've never even heard that term. That's the first time.
It's like a mix between a person whose personality has a balance of extrovert and introvert features.
Slash normal.
Right. I've heard plenty of public speakers say that they're introverts or ambiverts. And you'd never guess because when they're in front of people, you know, they seem so outgoing. But I guess what I've heard separates introverts is that we charge our batteries in peace, in silence. You know, if I have to be extroverted all day or act like an extroverted person, I am super drained by the end of the day. Whereas extroverts, I heard they gain energy from that.
Yeah, they're freaks.
I agree.
Well, look, this has been so much fun. Look, we talked a lot about your portrait parties, and I know you do have is it a course or is it a kit? Like, what is it that you have to help people that want to try this themselves?
Yeah, it's a kit because people started asking me, other photographers started asking me how I did this. Actually, right after I threw the very first portrait party and put the video on Facebook, photographers started asking me how I did it. I didn't expect that because I thought it was already a common theme or a common concept, especially among family portrait photographers, for example. So after getting the question multiple times, email, Facebook message, and writing out these super long, detailed answers, I decided just to put a kit together. So it's a step-by-step e-guide. It has checklists in it and tips on how to help market your party. It comes with a pre-designed flyer, a ready-to-go registration form, email scripts as well to get people excited. So yeah, it's like a portrait party in a box, so to speak.
Wow. Awesome. Okay, so you could take this kit and have a portrait party, what, within, say, 6 weeks or 4 weeks?
If it's your first one, I'd probably recommend at least 6 weeks. Because even with the kit, it still feels like a lot of moving parts. So I think my first one, it was at least 6 weeks. Now I'll give it like a month.
Okay, and if someone wasn't a member of a Chamber of Commerce or a B&I group or one of these kind of associations, how long would you wait after joining one of these groups before you introduce the idea of a portrait party? Or could you do one straight away?
Oh, interesting. I would say do one straight away. I threw mine pretty quick after moving here. Pretty soon, maybe a couple months after joining the Chamber of Commerce. And here's why. So for the Chamber of Commerce here, they will actually help you do a ribbon cutting if you're a new business or an open house. They will help you market it as part of your membership. So I paid my $100 and they actually, like when I joined, they gave me some forms right off the bat, like some PDF forms, and said, if you want us to help you throw an open house or a ribbon cutting, then let us know, fill out this form. So when I did my portrait party, I made that my open house event. It gave it extra marketing juice because they started accepting registrations on their end. They marketed it. They put it out on Facebook. They included it on their, I think they had a page on their website, like where they have events where you can register. Because I'm just a new member having my open house, they had the mayor come out and they had some speakers, like a short little ceremony in the beginning. And so even though it was kind of standard, I was still able to post on Facebook like, hey, the mayor's coming to my party. This is going to be great. I'm super excited. And people are like, wow, the mayor's coming, you know? Plus, like I said, I was new to the area. I didn't know a ton of people. I needed all the marketing help that I could get. So if you're just joining the chamber, I don't know how every chamber works in every state, but usually they have resources to help you. And especially if you're a new member, use their resources if you can.
Fantastic. That is so good. Wow. I know that the listener's going to be pumped about this if they're thinking about trialing this and also joining the group. So that's great. Shamira, where is the best place for the listener to check out what you're doing? I know you're everywhere. Where's the best place or best couple of places to find out what you're up to?
If they want to head over to prophotographerjourney.com, that's actually where I talk a lot about photography business stuff because that's where I geek out. And that's where I have my podcast. And I like to interview photographers from all around the world about how they run their business. So that's just prophotographerjourney.com. And we've got over 100 episodes, cool resources for photographers that want to up their business game. I have other links that link out from Pro Photographer Journey, but that's probably the most beneficial for other photographers right now.
Fantastic. Well, I'll link to that and also all the other things that I found in the show notes. So the listener can go and do a little bit more digging if they want to. And obviously I'll link to the portrait party kit as well. So Shamira, look, a massive thanks. Thanks for being so open and for sharing some of your experiences. And I had a great time chatting to you. So thanks so much.
Hey, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Alrighty, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Shamira Young. Shamira, if you're listening, again, a massive thanks for sharing everything you did. You're amazing. I love the idea of the portrait party. It's such a cool idea. I love the video that you've created around it. And I also love the course you've put together. It's an absolute bargain at $127. That's incredible. So, yeah, look, again, a massive thanks for sharing everything you did. I love talking to you. I look forward to staying in touch in the future. For you, the listener, what did you think? How good an idea is the portrait party? I hope you get a chance to implement this, particularly if you are a headshot or commercial photographer. I'd love to hear about it if you do. You can go back and take all the notes you can and listen to that interview with Shamira to make sure you've got everything in order. If you want to, I guess, take a shortcut and have everything laid out for you, step by step with cheat sheets and the whole lot, grab Shamira's course, the portrait party course. You can find it at photobizx.com/portrait party. So that's photobizx.com/portrait party. It's $127. It's an absolute bargain for what you get. I wouldn't even think about trying to work all this stuff out myself if I had a course like this where it's just laid out. You do your first party using Shamira's help and you'll be well in front for that small investment. Now, I've got links to the Portrait Party course plus anything and everything else that Shamira mentioned in the episode. You can find them in the show notes over at photobizx.com/234. I've also got examples of her work. You'll see the video that we talked about. That's amazing in itself. What a great selling tool to get people excited about portrait parties and what you do and how you work. So definitely check that out. At the bottom, there's a comments area. So if you have any follow-up questions for Shamira, you know, if there's something that I didn't ask that you wish that I did, then hit her up there. I know she'll be happy to come back. I've got links to her Photographer Journey podcast. I mean, yeah, it's all there in the show notes for you. Now, if you are a premium member, you'll get an email from me regarding this episode today. You'll also get a special link to a special price for the Portrait Party course where I'm going to be looking after you there. And I'll add Shamira into the Facebook group as well. So if you want to chat with her there, connect, ask questions, anything you like, she'll be available to answer those questions inside the Premium Members Facebook group.
You're listening to Photo Biz Exposed with your host, Andrew Helmich.
I've only got one announcement to close out today's show, and you might remember Kate Densmore, particularly if you're a day-in-the-life photographer or interested in day-in-the-life photography. That was episode 209. She's a US-based photographer. She wrote the book Stories of Home, The Art of Photographing Family, which is available at Craft and Vision. It's an incredible book. That's worth getting. It's a great read. Lots of helpful tips if you're interested in shooting day-in-the-life type work. But anyway, I digress. I received an email from Kate because I'm subscribed to her newsletter, and she's going through what so many of us do. I mean, actually, maybe a little bit different, so I should preface that by saying she just has too much on her plate. And just last week, she had to take her eldest daughter to the dentist, and there was a tooth with bad decay, and the dentist showed her, and you know, she felt like she was failing as a mum. She felt like she wasn't doing what she's meant to do as a mother and, you know, and look after her kids, which is crazy. I mean, I know she's an amazing mother, but she had this big guilt trip. And then she looked at her life and realized that she just spread herself too thin with too many Facebook groups, doing so many shoots, teaching, doing all these different things. And she realized that she wants to put more of her focus back onto her family and back onto her photography and her clients, and just pull back from social media. It's the thing that I'm hearing more and more about. I mean, Kristen Kaup, she gave up Facebook not too long ago. I'm pretty sure she's still alive and okay. So I wrote to Kate to ask, you know, if everything's okay and, you know, what are you going to keep doing? Because you know, I love what you do. And she said that, you know, photography and her clients are going to be her main focus, but she still wants to keep teaching this one particular class. And I didn't actually know about this class when I interviewed Kate, but it's on the illuminateclass.com platform. So it's not something I have been familiar with, but I went and checked it out. And she has this class or course coming up called Elements of Self-Critique. And I think if you're a photographer that is struggling to find their own style, or maybe you don't have the guts to shoot the way you really want to and display it, and you're struggling with what you think you like about your own work, but you find hard to put into words, or you find hard to share with other people, then I think this course could be a really good fit for you. It's called Elements of Self-Critique, Developing Tools for Empowered Growth with Kate Densmore. I'm going to link to it in the show notes, but I really like the sound of this one. And I know Kate's lovely. She's so passionate about family photography and documentary style shoots. And she has a real style about herself. And if you read her book, Stories of Home, which are full of her photography, you'll see that, you know, here is a photographer that has found her style, knows what it is, believes in it, and is getting booked because of it. And, you know, to me, that's the holy grail, isn't it? I mean, to have recognizable work that people want to book and pay you for to be a part of, that's just awesome. Anyway, I'll link to all that stuff in the show notes. Again, they are at photobizx.com/234. Oh, the course I mentioned is $250. So they've got a silent seat for $250 and active seats for $300. So I'm guessing the active seat, you can ask questions and be more involved. But if you like to sit back and watch, then it looks like you can pay $250. Alrighty, that is it for this episode of the podcast. I look forward to chatting to you in the comments area, inside the members Facebook group, just on Facebook, or even via email. And it's andrew@photobizx.com if you have any questions. If you want to recommend a photographer, if you'd like to hear a particular question thrown at every guest, if you want to suggest a change to the podcast, or if you just love what you're hearing and you want to say hi, I love getting those emails too. So yeah, look, I'm here to help and serve you as best I can, and I want to see you succeed with your photography business. So let's do that. All right, have an awesome week, and I'll chat to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.